Today's episode of Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by The City. Put your children on a bus by themselves and send them to The City. They'll be fine. Not a problem. Just let them walk around all night. There's nobody there. Just the children.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Josh Kagan, and we have an awesome special guest for our awesome summer vacation episode. Ladies and gentlemen and people of all ages, it is Allie Gertz.
Hello.
Yay. Allie is a multi-talented multimedia performer, singer, songwriter, comedian, lover of just about every TV show imaginable, known for amazing songs about The Simpsons and Arrested Development and all sorts of intellectual properties. And gosh, we're just pleased as punch to have her today.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm very excited to do the podcast.
What, Allie, is your, what is your kind of dime bag history with the Peanuts?
Your Peanuts experience.
I love the Peanuts. I watch the Halloween and Christmas episodes or movies every single year with my family. Have since I was a little kid and always will.
That we say we all.
Yeah, those are, after watching all six of them of the 1960s output, Molly and I have come to the decision that those are pretty much the only ones worth watching.
The Easter one's pretty good, too.
We haven't gotten there yet, but we agree.
Yeah, we're doing these. We are doing these in order.
Ooh, very cool.
So we started with the Charlie Brown Christmas and worked our way through the 1960s specials, most of which are Drek. And with the exception of Charlie Brown Christmas and Great Pumpkin, they're really bad. They're not particularly well animated. And the characters aren't even really particularly the characters.
They're kind of stalling for time, which is odd because they're only 20 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why today's episode was a goddamn delight. Today we are talking about 1969's A Boy Named Charlie Brown, the last filmed Charlie Brown product of the 1960s, and the first Charlie Brown feature film. Big fat hit. It premiered at Radio City Music Hall, made $12 million at the box office, which...
That's more money than I have.
It's certainly... It's about what Banjo has, I believe. I think that's what he's got in his account right now. So it was a spectacular hit, and here, before we dive into it, is my synopsis. Synopsis. A boy enters a spelling bee. Also, a dog drinks 3 glasses of water. Synopsis.
That's pretty much it. I'm Ben Molly Lewis.
Can you spell synopsis?
Oh, God. Poor Charlie Brown. Poor Charlie Brown, who finds himself in like this. The last act of this movie is like some weird Requiem for a Dream scenario, with Linus just sort of wandering the city screaming and Charlie Brown basically rocking back and forth in a dirty hotel room, just spelling words.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Had this been live action, I think it would have been a much scarier, grittier film.
A friend of mine on Twitter just had that theory the other day about Finding Dory.
Oh, my God.
If Finding Dory was made with humans, it would be the most horrifying terror film of all time.
Which makes me ask a pretty obvious question. Could you take any dark comedy or dark movie and replace them with fish or other big-eyed animals and suddenly it's a kid's film?
Well, could you go the other way and replace the cast of Requiem for a Dream with the cast of the Peanuts? Would that...
Well, the Peanuts, I think, might make things still pretty sad.
Yeah.
This is definitely still a sad film.
It'd be totally appropriate, absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say totally appropriate.
No, tonally.
Tonally.
No. Yeah. This,
and speaking of tonally, just overall, and we were talking about this a little before we began the episode proper, after the kind of 2 great episodes and 4 garbagey episodes that were the TV output, this was, for Molly and I, a goddamn delight.
It was just a breath of fresh air. It sort of solved a lot of the issues that we've had where, well, it was odd because it did sort of the things we'd complained about where it was just kind of stalling for time with these sort of lush visual sequences that didn't do a lot, but they were so lovely to look at.
They really were. They were, and we will retire this after this. They blandished the hell out of this.
Well, we're going to use that in future seasons, don't we? That's going to be on the shirt.
even from that first opening shot, it looks like the Sunday comic just jumped off the page. And in fact, if I believe, if I'm correct, that is word for word a Sunday comic, that cloud thing. And it is just, it looks perfect. I can only imagine, as I was watching it, it's one of the few Charlie Brown things that I've ever seen that I was like, oh, I wish I had seen this on a big screen.
Yeah, it's so cinematic.
They really swung for the fences. And Molly, you were particularly excited about the look of the film.
Yeah, and it reminded me a lot of a TV special up until the Ocean's 11 baseball sequence. And then I was like, oh, well, we are off to the races now. This is going to be great.
Absolutely. And I would even take a step back to that opening credit sequence, which is real punchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though it's that dippy Champion Charlie Brown music, it's real, like, monochromatic and like I said, punchy. And I even like the font. It's just, it makes you go like, oh, I'm at a movie.
Oh, this is a movie now. Yeah.
Oh, we're actually doing this. And it's Charlie Brown. And then they list all the garbage characters.
Even characters that don't have lines. Shermie didn't have a line.
Shermie does not say a goddamn thing in this entire picture.
And every movie it's the same.
Snoopy is featured.
Yes.
And featuring Snoopy.
Introducing Snoopy as himself.
Yes. He's like he's like one of the cast members who hasn't quite made the cast of SNL yet. And then after this sort of dreamy Belle and Sebastian-y looking at clouds opening and this sort of punchy, real mod looking opening credit sequence, we are in to our first of three Rod McEwen songs of the movie. Allie, do you have any familiarity with Mr. McEwen's output?
Not before this.
No. Here's the only thing I knew about Rod McEwen before doing a little reading up on him. He released a million books of poetry that were kind of the things that would be sold in Hallmark stores and very successful, made a bunch of albums that also did very well without really ever receiving any, critical acclaim. And my mom told me once that his voice is the way it is because he used to read poetry in bowling alleys. And every time I think about that and then I hear his voice, which is a little more like, I always imagine him as like a cross between Tom Waits and Ned Flanders.
Sure.
Like he's lived, like if you read up on him, he's lived this, like he had a really rough life beginning and he expatriated himself to Paris where he met Jacques Brel and first became famous translating Jacques Brel's songs. One of which became Seasons in the Sun, the Terry Jacks 1970s Goodbye Mama, It's Hard to Die song.
Which we're all familiar with, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But the stars out of reach were just starfish on the beach. And the song is maudlin and sad and a weird way to start a movie.
And well, I think the rub there is that I found out, you had told me after I'd already watched this once, that in the French version of this film, that song is sung by Serge Gainsbourg.
What?
Which that seems like a step up, right? Like,
hell yeah.
Oh my God.
It is a giant step up. And yet, because in the movie, it's just sort of like, it's a weird way to start the movie. Although
it's like, you know what it is? It is spending your birthday alone in a hotel bar music. You know what I mean? Like, and like the lounge singer kind of throws you a bone like, it's okay, Charlie. You know, it's kind of got that quality to it.
Yes. And he calls Charlie Brown Charlie in both of the songs, which feels wrong.
Yeah. We both went to the cheer up, Charlie. It's that exact hole.
There are a lot of bathroom breaks built into this film, for lack of a better word. I consider Cheer Up Charlie from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to be like one of the quintessential, all right, you've been sitting here for 20 minutes. Everybody go run to the bathroom.
I've always loved that song. But I write very sad music about cartoons, so this appealed to me in a real big way.
So you love Cheer Up Charlie? Or
I love Cheer Up Charlie, and I liked the Charlie Brown song. I thought it was, feature films, when you are just a comic or have just comic strip or have just had like short things, I assume are expecting new viewers that don't know who Charlie Brown is. So it is a good way to say, just like, so you know, our hero is a loser.
Well, sort of. But then he also says things like, his smile brightens up a room. And then that weird line where he's like, that magic that only little boys
have.
Yeah. Oh, no.
This is going to be admissible in court one day. No.
But we are introduced, but Allie makes a great point. If we are not familiar with Charlie Brown, regardless of the song, he builds a kite, he walks outside, it's destroyed, he comes inside, he builds another kite.
Yeah.
And for the Charlie Brown that Molly and I have been seeing in these, past episodes, where he is like this manic, self-sabotaging, really just somebody who needs to just lay on an analyst couch and stay there. In this movie, we see the Charlie Brown of the strip.
Yeah. They kind of set up that sort of Sisyphean struggle he's stuck in real short, like, just like, yeah. Charlie Brown sucks at stuff. But he tries.
But he tries. And he doesn't have like a weird sense of, in some of the episodes, he's had like this weird, like, we're going to do it. We're going to win. We're going to grit our teeth and bear down. And in this, he's more like, God, I hope I just don't fuck up every day of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that I liked in this one was when he's like walking towards the baseball game, he's like super excited about it. Like he loves every element that's passing him by. He loves the smell of all the different things that he lists, and like he's pretty happy. So it makes his tumbles a lot sadder.
Now I'm just imagining Charlie Brown's tumbler.
That's on you. I take no responsibility.
That's fair enough. So he, yeah, and so there's some kite flying and he's terrible at it. And basically the first half hour of this movie is just setting up the basic idea that Charlie Brown is bad at a lot of things.
Yeah, which we knew going in. But if this is your introduction to the Charlie Brown-iverse, then that's kind of necessary.
You're gonna. I don't know if it's necessary to the tune of a half hour.
I mean, I think if we're going to talk about like how much air could have been squeezed out of this movie.
There's most of it.
Most of it, yeah. But yeah. They had sort of a luxury of time.
And it is a luxurious looking thing. Mm-hmm. He goes, you know, he tries to fly a kite. It does not work. He goes to play baseball. He's very bad at it.
But he looks cute.
He does.
He does. Which Lucy takes great pleasure in pointing out in a way that you can't tell if she's zizzing him or if she actually thinks he looks cute.
I think it's the only time she's ever said like a nice thing about him. And he goes like, I don't look cute.
And yet it bothers him. And yet when Schroeder's like, hey, what's up with the dandelions? He's like, oh, the girls don't want me to pick them. Girls love dandelions, by the way.
I know I do.
Molly is currently covered in dandelions.
Just a whole flower crown.
We've been asking her to take it off because it's making us sneeze, but she absolutely refuses.
Nope, it's mine. Make a wish.
Schroeder is like, what is up with all the dandelions? And Charlie Brown, for some reason, feels the need to relay all of the information.
Yeah.
Well, the girls won't come down and they think I look cute.
Speaking of relaying all the information, I don't know if we have time to go through the movie plot by plot point or we're going to be here for 8 hours.
Oh, absolutely not. But I did want to point out that Schroeder not only zizzes Charlie Brown, but does it in a very coquettish fashion where he's like, you know what, Charlie Brown? You do look kind of cute, and then sticks his butt out in a weird way that's like, this is what people who think people are cute look like.
Cute like my, like dad ass. Like, what does that even mean?
But it is one of the rare times that Schroeder does anything non-Beethoven related.
That's true.
They lose the game, and Charlie Brown is, you know, he goes home, he takes a bath,
takes a bath. Can we come back to that? Like, he lost the game, and he was like walking home like, well, I guess I just suck at things again, and then he gets in a bathtub. It is, if like they couldn't make, like, how can we just kind of amplify this melancholy? Well, let's show him taking a bath alone with no bubbles or anything.
No bubbles. That's an accurate.
That's the most melancholy kind of bath.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Except, no bubbles except until the ship sinks, mm-hmm. Where he puts a little boat in the water with him and he's like, I can't do anything. And then he consigns his boat to a watery grave.
Is there anything sadder than a bubbleless bath? Like, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't think, I mean, baths are luxurious. They're supposed to make you happy and relaxed, but, mm-hmm. but without the aid of something.
I'll bet you it's like a lukewarm bath, too. Oh. It's not even a hot bath.
Oh, so sad.
So let's go back for just a second because the first half hour of the movie is Charlie Brown being terrible at things and then two or three psychedelic freakout segments.
Yeah. Well, the Star Spangled Banner segment during ahead of the baseball game is one of my favorite things on film. I just want that to play at every sporting event.
I love it.
Beautifully blandished.
It's, I was doing a little research on it, going through the wiki, and there's no like hard evidence, but they were observing like, oh, there's some pop art influences. There's some Andy Warhol influences, whatever it is. Thank God.
Yeah.
Because Schultz's universe is not exactly the most visually stimulating one. But the America segment is great. The baseball game segment is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen direction that good in a lot of live action things. Like, it was really beautiful. Like, them, the way that they divide the screen into threes when they're each showing the people up to bat, mm-hmm. I think is so good.
Yeah. And it looks like, by the end, it looks like a comic strip, which I'm sure was entirely intentional. But for such a visually static universe as this, to us, certainly, it's great. I wonder what parents and grandparents and little kids going to the movie theater thought of these weird psychedelic Terry Gilliam, Peter Maxey segments.
Well, I mean, what else was in theaters at this point? Because Yellow Submarine was out by then. Like,
I was going to say too, like, in terms of like kid movies, like all of the Rankin Bass stuff had come out, and there's like one of the lesser known ones is Santa Claus Is Coming to Town and A Year Without a Santa Claus, and those both have some pretty psychedelic things too.
True.
Yeah, I think kids can handle it. It's weird to imagine these being screened for an auditorium full of people.
Yeah. And yet, this is the only, and I've seen all of the Charlie Brown movies and seen a couple of them, like, as an actual kid in actual theaters. But thinking back, this is the only one that I found myself, when I was watching it, thinking, oh, I would love to see this in a theater. Mm-hmm. I bet this plays very well.
I just, like, wondered, like, did this joke land? Like, when they made, you know, there were particular moments where I was like, what happened in the auditorium when they said this? Did they understand?
Well, I think like any good children's entertainment, there was stuff that the kids laughed at, like, Charlie Brown fell down on his butt because no football. And then there was stuff that was just for the parents, like the entire back end of Act One, where Lucy basically pulls a Clockwork Orange on Charlie Brown.
That was terrifying to me.
100% terrifying. You want to talk about something that would be cuckoo if you did that with live actors.
Yeah.
Charlie Brown is depressed because he's terrible at everything, which we've all learned over the course of the last 20.
As it's been established.
Yes, as it's been established ad infinitum. He goes to Lucy, as we have pointed out before, the number one cause of most of his problems.
But also, like, the president mayor of this whole town.
Yes.
So what are you going
to
do?
Oh, Allie, let's bring you up to speed on this really quick. We've been working under the theory for our entire season that there was some sort of industrial accident or event that turned all of the adults in the Charlie Brown universe into mouthless meat lumps. Mm. And now the children are in trouble, which is why adults like that, because their mouth has been melted over.
I haven't read anything that would disprove that theory.
And it surprises us how little the specials do to contradict us.
Yeah. Until we get to Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown. I think that's the first time we see adult humans.
It seems like they just wheel in a lump when they need some authority figure. Like, well, we need someone to teach this class. You know, there's not, I think in a scene in this movie, there is supposed to be a security guard, you know, guarding the door of the spelling bee, and it is a child in a uniform.
Yeah,
like, that would be a good place for an adult, wouldn't you think? Nope.
No, and not one of those slightly taller children from Short Summer, Charlie Brown.
No,
like, this was a median-heighted child.
It was just the same height as everybody else.
Yeah.
I went to the grocery store today, and someone asked me what I was doing, and I was tired, so I told them everything because, like, I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, just say things are good, and then you go about your way. I was like, well, I'm doing this podcast about the Peanuts cartoons, and then the guy asked me, it's like, do you think that we would be talking like womp 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 because we're adults? And it, like, really floored me, especially because I was very tired, and it kind of hurt me in a deep way.
Was this a gentleman you knew, or was this just someone
someone giving me coffee?
Ah.
But I kind of think that it would have the Polar Express kind of thing where, like, you know, like the bell, you can only hear it once you believe in Santa Claus, and, like, once you're too old for it, you stop hearing it.
Right.
I kind of think that if you're kind of like a child at heart, you still are able to talk in the regular voices. So it's not until you've, like, given up your youth that you start sounding like a, you know, whatever instrument that is.
A trombone.
Yeah.
One of the Wikipedia pages, whatever the first episode that featured that adult voice in it, referred to it as tromboning.
Nope.
And we're and
they don't accept that.
And Molly does not accept that.
Pelvic thrusting while they were typing that.
as much of Wikipedia is written, I feel like.
But, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So Charlie Brown, depressed, goes to his psychiatrist, who is also his number one antagonist on Earth, besides Charlie Brown and God himself, and is like, hey, I'm a bummer and I'm bad at everything. And Lucy's just like, thank God we can finally talk about how awful you are. Phew. Like, this has not been happening since the strip debuted in the mid-50s. No, 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 no. This is finally my opportunity to tell you that you're terrible. Come with me,
Charlie
Brown.
The first step is admitting you have a problem. Yes. Let's go.
And then they go to her house, and she puts him in a room that appears to only have a screen and a cushion. Mm-hmm. And basically reveals to Charlie Brown that she has been following him around with a long-distance lens for years, possibly. And shows...
She might have a team. We don't know.
She could possibly. Oh, yeah, that's true. Violet and Patty. Mm-hmm. Everyone's working to document every second of Charlie Brown's life. Mm-hmm. And she points out all of his flaws in gut... wrenching detail, including his propensity for fatness.
Just like technical drawings of like, well, yeah. You see your gut coming over
it,
here. And
it
you're...
got a little like Hitler-y, like just like pointing out just like
the nose.
Nose size.
Oh, that didn't even occur to me.
That made me very uncomfortable.
Charlie, and here are you, Charlie Brown, controlling all the world's banks. This is definitely a fault. And points out his fat, an arrow pointing out his stomach and things that I don't think you could do in a children's movie today. Like, all right, pitch me your movie. Well, for about 10 minutes, the lead is going to call the other lead fat and point out how fat he is. I would also like to point out that I feel like Charlie Brown is shaped exactly like everyone else in this universe.
She probably, do you think she has like a similar set of slides for like when Schroeder's finally like, okay, fine, let's get together. Then like, oh, look, here's all the reasons you're great. Like, or do you think she has a stack like this for everybody in town? Like, just waiting?
I mean, everybody's. Here's the thing. Everybody, like, at one point, she's like, his head is very big, his nose is big, he's fat. Again, everybody is shaped exactly the same mm-hmm. way in this universe. So I wonder if she just has, like, a standard template of people's faults.
I would say that Charlie Brown's head is far less weird than Linus's bizarre shaped head. Does anyone
Absolutely.
Else get bothered by his weirdly no. shaped head?
I can't map any of those parts to parts of a regular
yeah.
face. Absolutely.
What is it?
If Linus did not have hair... he would look like John Merrick.
Yes.
It is a oddly, yeah. he's got an oddly shaped
It looks like
dome.
he's got left out in the sun a little too long and just kind of, little cartilage bones just went yoink.
He hasn't fully formed yet.
Yeah, he's just inflate his head.
He's a Play-Doh fun factory. And then after the fatness slides, Lucy then shows Charlie Brown more of his faults.
Which are too graphic to be shown on screen, apparently.
Too graphic of graphic blandishment. And that is truly horrifying.
Yeah.
If for no other reasons, the noises that Charlie Brown is making. Molly, will you drop in the noises that Charlie Brown is making?
No, no. Ugh, turn it off. I can't stand it any longer. I can't stand to watch. I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
And there they were.
Aren't those horrifying? And especially divorced from like lovable cartoon characters, it sounds like he's Nick Cage in 8mm.
Yeah.
He's just watching something. What could he, what I pose this to our panel. What could she possibly be showing him pictures of?
His own nudity.
Allie?
That was immediate.
Molly, let's follow up with that just for a second. Do you think there are also arrows?
Oh, I'm sure. What's this spot? What's this? What's this thing? I'm sure.
Allie, what do you think she's showing him pictures of?
I think, well, we know based on the Thanksgiving episode that he's horrible at cooking and can only make toast with butter on it. Or can't even make toast with butter on it. He can only make like popcorn and jelly beans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Snoopy and Woodstock made all that, though.
He explains that he can't even make toast with butter on
yeah.
it. So I think he's being forced to look at his horrible cooking.
Okay.
I like that better than my own answer. I would just like to state.
Well, Charlie Brown's response at least makes more sense with yours. But I like the idea that he's somehow so bad of a cook.
He's revolted by the sight of it. You know what that vocal sounds like is when you hear the B-roll of like, oh, here's, you know, someone recording their audio for this video game and they have to record just a bunch of sounds of them getting clobbered.
Oh, amazing.
You know.
That must have been a great couple of hours at the recording studio. Just a small child standing on tiptoes at a mic. All right, now sound more horrified. Now, some were horrified with yourself.
Can we just take a moment to just appreciate the contributions of Peter Hollins? Because this was his last contribution to the Charlie Brown animated universe.
Oh.
He nailed it.
He did.
He nailed it.
They still use his "ah," which is great.
Yes.
I think they also gave it to Linus for a second. Did you see that?
When Charlie Brown loses everything at the end?
When Linus was reunited with his blanket, he goes, "ah!" And I'm pretty sure there's no way that was another child. That was the same child.
Charlie Brown has been shown all of his faults and is a broken wretch of a man wandering the streets. Linus joins him. They talk about what a loser Charlie Brown is on a million different levels. And then the information is introduced that there is going to be a spelling bee at school tomorrow by Lucy and Violet and Patty.
Exposition. Goodbye.
Hi, we're the Fabulous Exposition Sisters. And they do a thing that happens a lot in the Charlie Brown universe, which is they give Charlie Brown a piece of information and say, you should do it, and then immediately go, but you shouldn't, because you suck at everything.
They just kind of dispense a little bit of, like, false hope, and then just pop it, and then run away.
But before running away, we're into our second Rod McEwen song, Failure Face. Mm-hmm.
That was so cruel.
It is.
And not clever.
It is a step above the poor little Charlie Brown yan yan ya song from mm-hmm. You're in Love, Charlie Brown, which is just a playground taunt, but not by much. I am sitting here with two excellent songwriters. As excellent songwriters, when you hear something that ham-fisted, is it like nails on chalkboard for you?
Well, now I want to write something about ham-fistedness. So, pardon me, I'm distracted.
The worst of the X-Men.
It's not the most nuanced or subtle thing I would have thought to write.
In a race to be stupid, you'd be first place.
The Grinch song is a good example of a slew of insults done well.
Yes.
This would be the opposite of that.
So on your scorecard, McEwen's 1-for-1 on this. You like the opening song.
Yes.
Failure Face, not as good.
I would call this his Failure Face.
Boom.
Yes.
Boom. Take that. Oh! Sorry.
It's a little better if you believe it was written by children, but to know it was written by an adult who got paid to write that song stings a little bit.
Speaking of Failure Face, we have to go back just 1 second to one of my favorite reveals in the movie.
Yes, please.
During Lucy housing Charlie Brown for all of his many faults, we work in a pull away the football routine, which is rote. A rote, perfect Charlie Brown falls in his butt thing. And then there's much laughter. And then Lucy says, would you like to see that on the instant replay? And this is a thing I completely forgot happened in this movie. She then steps to the right and there is a complete NFL worthy, legit instant replay machine set up.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I feel like this movie sort of took advantage of the, I mean, it is obviously it's a world where children walk as men and there are no adults and they're just meat lumps. But I like the idea that somehow Lucy, because she now runs the world, or at least this quadrant of it, has access to this kind of technology.
And is choosing to use it as such instead of, you know, in a way to recover the parents or replay the horrible events that went down.
Send a message to the outside world. Oh, God, help us.
Or at least the child representative of a different country.
I'm not going to interrogate the logic of why she has one of these machines, but there really are one of two options. Either one, there's no adults and she stole it from the local TV station. Or two, it's some Veruca assault situation. And she was like, hey, mom and dad, I would like an instant replay machine to humiliate Charlie Brown. Okay, honey. Like, those are the only two ways that could have happened.
I like the first one.
I like first as well.
Yeah. And the slow motion Charlie Brown. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that's going to GIF very nicely.
Absolutely.
And slow motion Charlie Brown is one of them. But my favorite bit in that is when Lucy's like, look at your face. It is terrible. It is a failure face, which I'm sure McEwen watched the movie and went, there's my song right there. Hey, bowling alley, keep it down. I got to write a tune.
He had a deadline. That was very short.
But my favorite is when Lucy is like, look at your face. It's terrible. And now look at my face. Now just look at it. Now just keep looking
at it. Isn't
that
the face of a Christmas queen? If ever I have seen one.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys have already discussed on the podcast the very, like, Helga-Arnold dynamic that happens so often with, like, little girls and boys, where little girls are bullies to boys that they like because that's the way that you show that you like them.
Well, she must love the hell out of Charlie Brown.
She does.
She does.
She yeah. really does.
Is that Hey Arnold?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. gotcha.
Helga Pataki.
Oh, is she the governor's daughter?
It does. No.
No, is that not canon?
I don't know.
So, Charlie Brown decides he's going to enter the spelling bee. Everybody in his, they sing a dumb little song about how he shouldn't. He does it anyways after battling all of me style with his own arm. And he gets up there and he wins the spelling bee. And it's one of the rare times we see a success for Charlie Brown. And unlike in the specials, when Charlie Brown gets sort of the slightest crumb of a cookie, he kind of dances around and does just like this awful little jig and is like, I did it! I walked across the street!
You can't
like,
say I didn't.
You have to calm down, Charlie Brown. In this case, I feel like he's right in throwing it in everyone's faces because Lucy has really been housing him the entire time.
Well, and it's not this meaningless thing like the sort of boys versus girls distinction in, what was it, Short Summer, where no, the girls did not antagonize him in any way. He was just decided, I'm going to show you. But they were like, you should sign up for this. No, you shouldn't because you suck.
Yeah. Like, and here's a song about how you suck. And we've even got props, this yeah, history book.
That is legit retribution. I get it. I get it.
Yeah. And in fact, he could have even put it more in their face and didn't. And the other really interesting thing is that once he does that, the girls give him no reaction whatsoever. There's no satisfaction, no like, well, you got us, Charlie Brown. They just sort of stare at him blankly like, well, I'm not even sure what that's supposed to communicate. What? When the girls give him absolutely no reaction whatsoever, do you two think that it's them sort of just sort of throwing him shade, or do they actually not know how to process this?
I would think it's the latter. I think they kind of... It's either that they don't want to, they don't know how to process Charlie Brown being good at something, or they just don't want him to give him the satisfaction of their approval. We don't know how deep this rabbit hole goes.
True.
Yeah, yeah. I think that it's kind of just like they only know how to be mean, and so they're just like, oh, well, all right. I'll be waiting.
You'll fail again, Charlie Brown. Throughout the movie, his friends are very odd because they are simultaneously rooting for him with the backbeat of, but he's going to fail.
They're very hot and cold.
Yes.
This whole, they depend on him and they expect him to succeed and fail at the same time.
Right.
Like, it's this very, I understand why Charlie Brown gets in his own head about this, if this is the environment.
These are the messages he's getting.
Yeah.
He needs some new friends.
But there aren't any because
of the accident.
Yeah.
Well, and Peppermint Patty lives in the next town.
Oh, I love Peppermint Patty so much.
She's great, and she's not in this movie for no reason.
She has no speaking parts.
She shows up. She is in a frame of the film. Mm-hmm. You have to squint to see it.
And what a frame.
Yeah. Speaking, Molly just used the word succeed about 90 times. Succeed is one of 400,000 words we are given in the movie's next musical number and our sort of top of act two. If the end of act one is Charlie Brown won the spelling bee and now has to do like the town-wide spelling bee, we will get into the rules and sort of the scope of the spelling bee later on. But Charlie Brown is boning up for the next round of the spelling bee and memorizing mnemonics. Snoopy and Linus join him for the most inscrutable learning song I have ever heard.
Only one word in the language ends in S-E-D-E. Supersede. Three others end in C-E-E-D. Exceed. Proceed. Succeed. All others end in...
Oh, I skipped it.
You did?
I skipped through it. I had to. It was...
It is so long, isn't it?
It was very long and very bad.
I mean, thank God someone invented rap, you know, a short time later. Yes. Like, geez.
It is so
probably
bad.
Probably because of this.
Just with something has to be done.
And the blame cannot fall on Mr. McEwen for this one. I forget the gentleman's name. It's not Vince Guaraldi, but it's the guy who arranged and composed.
Yeah.
Or not composed, but arranged and conducted.
Some guy with three names. Yeah.
Some guy with three names who had never possibly written a song before. Or heard words before. It was like, it reminded me of something from like Wundershowsen or Look Around You.
Yes.
In that it's nominally supposed to teach you things, But man, it's just like being hit with a sock full of letters.
Yeah, I kept hitting my head on my computer, and then I remembered I could change this. I don't have to watch it. I'm not in a theater in 1969.
Thank God.
Well, or you'd be going to the bathroom.
Or I'd be going to the bathroom.
This is also the first place that Snoopy busts out his mouth harp, which Wikipedia calls a Jew's harp, and that's another one of those phrases that I don't even know if I can say.
I don't like hearing it.
I'm not a fan. So there we go. That's the test.
We're shaking hands as we spin.
Flash bulbs.
Spinning newspaper. They don't like that word.
By the way, this is a Snoopy's harp, whatever you want to call it, racist or not, is a product you can still buy to this day. I found one at a knife store downtown. Molly received one already, and Allie, you will be receiving one as well.
Oh my goodness.
At the end of today's episode.
A brand new car.
Ah. And we will have one up for grabs for some sort of contesty thing that we will do because I just made this up. So I'll figure out what the rules of that will be.
Yeah, you'll have to run that by me in post.
I think it should be you guys should have to come up with a better name for this instrument.
Oh.
Oh.
There we go.
All right.
Perfect. And so the terrible song over, thankfully.
Well, and this is before Schoolhouse Rock, so we didn't have a template for the teach-in song. I guess we had Sesame Street.
We had Sesame Street, but it was, yeah, this.
Well, like, let's.
So where are we supposed to learn? Let's take a giant step back. Or is the joke supposed to be that this is inscrutable?
Well, because, like.
No, I don't think so.
And the movie is beautifully blandished visually and sort of audio aurally, I guess that's the term.
Yeah.
And this was a very ambitious sequence, clearly, like, unlike anything that has been on the silver screen before. And, I mean, you miss all the shots you don't take, Charlie Brown, but, like, what were they going for? Did they think that this form would catch on? Like, that's the thing that's baffling to me, is I can't describe this in terms of any sort of musical genre.
The closest I can get is, like, either
sort of like beatnik rap.
It's a little like Ken Nordine word jazz. It's a little
Like Mike Myers doing his like poems in So I Married an Axe Murderer.
What's especially great about this is that Allie entered the quote unquote studio, aka my living room, wearing a Wayne's World hat.
Oh shit, I did. I'm on brand. Oops, sorry, I did it again.
She came in with a Mike Myers agenda, and later on she's gonna be like, you know, this scene really, Snoopy's hockey scene, it really reminds me of the piss mop fight from The Love Guru. Yes. Am I the only one who sat through Love Guru?
I think it's called the Austin Powers harp.
Charlie Brown wins his second spelling bee in a row, but only when Snoopy wanders by the door, because in this world, Snoopy is allowed to roam free and leashless. No matter how awful he has been in previous episodes, including He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, in which he is possibly one of the world's greatest criminals. But here he's just free and easy and swinging in the breeze, walks by the thing, plays his mouth harp, his awesome powers harp, which somehow magically makes Charlie Brown remember this rule of I before E except after C.
It's some kind of like Skinner box thing.
Yes.
Some sort of operant conditioning.
Snoopy is Charlie's only friend.
And not a particularly great one.
Mm-hmm.
Although in...
Better than the rest.
He is definitely better than the rest. And he's definitely better in this than he is in any of the other specials.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly throughout the 1960s, Snoopy was at best indifferent and at worst hurting people.
Mm-hmm.
The Halloween episode one, there's like a 5-minute segment of him like piloting a plane or something, or like going through something.
Yes.
And that one's pretty cool because he's introverted and I like that.
He definitely has a life of the mind. He has a rich fantasy life. And I'm glad you brought that up, Allie, because that sequence was used in, I believe, Charlie Brown All-Stars, and then it was used in Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, and was used in this movie.
My lord.
It is that exact same when Snoopy has too much food in his tummy and has a nightmare about the Red Baron. It's just that footage again.
Put a snappy little Instagram filter on it and called it a movie.
That should be a Snapchat feature that they have.
The Charlie Brown.
The Red Baron.
The Red Baron filter. So Charlie Brown has now won two things in a row. And the children, instead of treating him to blank stares, now sing the last musical number. This is Would either of you earmark this movie as a musical?
I was thinking that while I was watching it, and the answer is no.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
There's only three songs? I don't think that
counts.
Four. No, that's like an EP. You need like an LP's worth of songs to call it a musical.
Yes. But we get into that. We get into Champion Charlie Brown. The only song in the movie that doesn't sound like it's being sung by children. Failure Face at least sounds like it's being sung by the voice actors of the kids. This sounds like a woman.
Like they cloned Blossom Dearie 12 times.
Oh, that, by the way.
Someone read my wishes.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's like the better version of the Polyphonic Spree for me.
Yeah.
If it was just 12 Blossom Dearies in choir robes, that would be fantastic. Yeah, they put him on his shoulders. They sing an equally dumb little... Allie, what was your opinion of Champion Charlie Brown?
It was very complex for children.
Which is why they had adults singing in high voices.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't make sense.
How so?
Just by how musically, like, adult it was, I felt like. But I liked it.
Oh, yeah. I
thought it was good.
For all their little sort of... Because it ostensibly is a, yay, Charlie Brown, you did it. But there are lots of little, like, sort of negs in there. Sort of, like, one of the last lines is, it must be something not to be nothing when you've been on the ground.
That...
It's kind of, just kind of pull the rug out from under him a couple times.
Well, yeah, but very slowly pulling the rug because that's a lot of double negatives to parse.
Yeah.
My brain split in half. Yeah. Listening to you repeat.
Well, luckily you've got your Wayne's World cap to hold it together. Party on. Charlie Brown sits in a big chair and Linus fans him with a blanket because Charlie Brown is the god emperor of this city.
And I want to point out Lucy's office, which looks great. She's got a beautiful desk suite.
She does everything well. Like,
she's got like a fountain pen set and a little executive trim.
And why is Lucy sitting behind her giant desk, Molly?
Well, because she owns that whole she owns the whole town.
Yes,
she has her pick of desks.
She is. It is Potterville. It is Lucyville. Yeah. But specifically, she's sitting behind the desk in this scene because she, and this is sort of what carries Lucy through the rest of the episode. Before this, she just handed Charlie Brown his butt. And now she wants to own 10 to 15% of his butt.
Mm-hmm. Maybe even 20%.
Maybe even 20%. Lucy is operating under the illusion, or who knows, well, we'll get to how big of a deal the spelling bee is, that once Charlie Brown aces this national spelling bee, which, by the way, Charlie Brown thought he was done.
And was so excited about it.
Like, I did it. I saw a thing through to its completion. I won. I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to have my friend fan me with his blanket in a way that isn't weird at all.
You know what I just put together?
What's up, buddy?
Back to a meat lump disaster theory.
Go on.
Charlie Brown went through two rounds of spelling bee, the sort of school-wide one and then the sort of town-wide one, yeah. I guess. And from there went to nationals. So there's only 10 towns in the Peanuts verse?
I wanted to talk about that, certainly.
Okay, good.
This spelling bee is a big, and it's like
very big deal.
Two spelling bees where you're like cat, C-A-T, dog, D-O-G.
Stomach.
Stomach, S-T-O-M-A, yeah. And then it's like, you do it again. And then they put you on a fucking bus and send you to, and not just any bus, the Spelling Express. Covered with ribbons and filled with children. It's like the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
They're just sending all of the children to the big city.
Well, nobody else is in the big city, so they kind of populate it sometimes. Got to keep the lights on.
So this is an Eastern Seaboard situation.
Seemingly.
Yeah.
Well, there are also more children on that bus than ended up on the stage. So maybe there's some sort of Jeopardy auditions kind of thing that they go through, some sort of gauntlet to get to the final.
There must be. But
it's organized by children. So it's all just a big old dog and pony show.
That is absolutely true. Still nationally televised.
Somehow. Lucy provided all the equipment.
That. Oh, my God.
It just goes down real deep.
She controls the media.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's on the cover of TV Guide, we saw.
That is absolutely true. Lucy is like, Charlie Brown, once you win this, we're going to get you. You're going to be a star of stage and screen. There's going to be, you're going to do commercials. It's this very unrealistic world that, or maybe
it's
realistic.
Kid logic.
It is definitely kid logic.
I remember thinking that way as a kid, too. Just like if one... And kind of now. I mean, I think a lot of artists kind of think that way, too. Just like, I got this many hits on this video. That means I'm guaranteed this many hits on the next video. And then this and this. And it grows and grows. And I'll be the king and queen. Like, it just never stops.
Both.
Yes, of course. In my dreams.
So they all tell Charlie Brown, look, dude, you're just going to have to do this. Charlie Brown And then Charlie Brown is in a fugue state for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Or the rest of the movie.
He says, I feel like I've been drafted, which is maybe an overstatement.
It is, but they certainly are. And again, no adults. They just put him on a bus that's festooned with ribbons.
The little paramilitary hats.
Yep. Spelling Express. He's got his big like sack of things. And I feel like Charlie Brown does not sleep for the remainder of the movie.
Mm-mm.
He is just face down in a book. Just rattling off words, spelling them like he's got to go on medication or something.
Yeah, like he was drafted. Like it is kind of a PTSD, like vet situation going on here. Like it's kind of crazy.
He breaks really quickly.
It terrifies me. But also he has this horrible syndrome where he's just spelling everything that he says, but they're mostly small words.
That is.
Which was not very convenient.
I noticed that as well. Cause he was like, oh my God, Charlie Brown's spelling everything. But Charlie Brown would just be like, boy, I could sure use a cup, CUP. And it's like, you swing for the fences there. Before Charlie Brown goes off to the empty city for the only event in America, mm-hmm. which is the spelling bee, Linus gives him his blanket. Charlie Brown doesn't want it, and Linus does not want to give it to him. They both do this dance, and Charlie Brown takes it.
But we need this conflict in the movie.
Because otherwise, the movie would be over in 10 minutes.
And what a disaster that would be.
Did you think the movie was too long?
Yeah.
Molly?
Yeah, it could have been an hour, easily, but they had to put it in a theater.
I maybe could have used one, if they had dropped I before E, I kind of liked... Which I think we can all agree was just awful. I kind of liked how, because one of my complaints often with the half hour specials is that they feel very long.
It's sort of, I feel like the specials we've seen so far have to account for commercial breaks in a way that this one did not. I expected they would fade out I before E at some point and it'd be like, another, really? Another verse? Is that what's happening?
I don't think I'd ever need to sit down and watch it top to bottom again, or at the very least I'd have it on as background noise. I like the way this movie breathed. I did not mind a lot of the padding in it. It's still too long at an hour and 25 minutes. Maybe it could have been an hour 10.
Okay. I wouldn't say it's too long, I guess. I guess I'd say it's not interesting enough.
That's fine.
Maybe length isn't really ever the problem of anything as long as they could keep your enjoyment levels high.
Yeah, the pacing is not great.
The pacing is not great, but it has at least that sort of dreamy, deliberate pacing of, again, it feels like a Sunday comic.
They sort of chose, like, we're going to really luxuriate in these sequences, and they kind of didn't account for how that affects the flow of the whole thing, right? Right.
Yeah.
For example, your second act turn having nothing to do with your protagonist.
Well, yeah.
The second act turn of this is, because Charlie Brown, that ship has sailed. They put him on a bus, they send him to an empty city, where it's just a city of children and then a hotel of children.
They each get their own apartment, apparently.
It's really a sweet ass deal.
Yeah.
All you have to do is spell words okay twice in a row, and that's it. You are on a bus and you are living the high life. You're ordering cold cereal.
Yeah.
In room service. That guy's partying like a rock star.
Yeah. Ordering dry cereal and then with a container of milk because he's very OCD and needs to have the milk.
Exactly. I appreciated that very much.
I liked that too.
He seems like the kind that would put his cereal into the milk rather than pouring the milk over the cereal.
Oh, you freak bitch, Charlie Brown.
And now we have a new name for the podcast. Taking a real different direction.
That's the fan edit that we're going to make that cuts out I before E.
Linus goes into withdrawal. Linus needs
He gets the DTs.
Yes. Linus needs to go to a hospital. Instead, he is given a dog and put on another empty bus and sent to the city to get his blanket back.
I hate this version of Linus. Linus is my favorite character of the Charlie Brown universe because he's smart and rational and empathetic and good. Like, I love his speech at the, and that's why we celebrate Christmas, Charlie Brown. Like, I love everything. And then he just loses his mind.
Which is canonical for the strip.
Yes.
Which is not to say I don't particularly love it either. And I could have done without the entire sort of, you want to talk about stuff that wasn't particularly interesting. Linus walking around an empty city at midnight, yelling into garbage cans for his blanket. I will say that compared to the 1960s specials, with the exception of Charlie Brown Christmas, this is the most on model and likable I've seen Linus.
And even like accounting for the fact, like we've found out since we've started working on this podcast that the Schultz family and the Schultz Foundation considers the strips and the TV specials to be separate canons entirely.
I believe that. I can see that for sure.
Which cleans up a lot of things, but it is still nice when they bother to check the source material.
Yeah. So, so now Linus goes to see Charlie Brown, and Molly and I were having a debate earlier about who is the worst friend in this friendship. Because besides Snoopy, Allie, I would say Linus is probably the closest thing.
Absolutely.
Certainly that Charlie Brown has to a human friend.
And he's so thoughtful most of the time. Like, I really like him a lot.
Yeah. And in this, he's particularly a great character. And he's a little egg-headed and he's a little nerdy and he's supportive while still being better than Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Which really, that
self-sacrificing to a fault.
Yes.
Perhaps. Yes.
Comes to Charlie Brown's lavish New York apartment and is like, where the fuck is my blanket? The night before Charlie Brown's most important day, he's basically like, look, I know you're freaking out, but let's concentrate on my needs. Mm-hmm. And then he passes out 9 times, leading to possibly my favorite Snoopy bit ever, which is only flawed because then they repeat it 92 more times. Linus passes out. Snoopy goes to get a glass of water. Stands next to Linus, drinks it, and then turns away from both of them.
It's very Bugs Bunny, Groucho Marx move.
It's a great move. Mm-hmm. But it's also very, it reminded me, like most things do, like the Jane Sibbery song, it reminded me of my dog. Because Banjo is possibly one of the, he is adorable and he's sitting right here, and we have all taken pictures of him. Banjo is possibly one of the least empathetic creatures on the planet. If Kayla or I are like, oh, I'm really sad, Banjo will just sort of look at us and be like, I'm going to let you handle this on your own. And then we'll at least, or take a few steps and then just turn his back to us as if to say, all right, well, let's all just stare in this direction until this unpleasantness is over.
This transaction is over. Yep.
How does that affect you?
We've just come to understand. There are great things about Banjo being sort of play it close to the chest type dude. He's not, as you can see, he's not all up in your face. He's not yappy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're also like, I'm having a real sad day and I could use my best friend to cheer me up, he's sort of like, yeah, the game's on. So let's catch up later.
So you're saying you should get a divorce from your dog?
I would sooner give up one of my limbs. he is a great dog. Linus and Snoopy. Charlie Brown is basically like, well, I'm sorry about your blanket, dummy. I don't know where it is. I must have lost it somewhere in New York City. It's either in the lobby or the library or somewhere in between.
So they both made mistakes.
They both made mistakes. Linus should have never given him the blanket in the first place. And Charlie Brown should never be trusted with anything.
Yeah. You know, it's hard because gifts, when you give people something, you know, you're not supposed to be doing it to get something in return, or you definitely are not supposed to ask for it back later. Like,
yep.
That's very rude. But, you know, if you accept a gift, you should be careful with it, especially if it was super thoughtful. I understand he was busy, but I would also be pretty hurt. However, I wouldn't be maybe having quite the panic attack on a very important night for my friend.
It's the two of them probably need to sit down and talk this out.
I mean,
at a later date.
Yes.
When Charlie Brown has gotten any sleep in his lifetime.
They are in second grade. They're doing a pretty good job.
And so a second grade boy and a dog go walking around New York City.
Alone.
An empty, devoid of human life New York City, which, Allie, do you ever live in New York?
I have not. I've visited.
Kayla and I often pointed out that walking around New York City late at night can be, depending on where you are and what time of night, a dicey proposition. But it is, in fact, there is actually nothing scarier than an empty block of New York City.
Because what's going on? What made it empty?
Exactly. And that's kind of what we're waiting for, except that instead what happens is Linus wanders around, yells in trash cans, and Snoopy has... I don't know if the Beethoven sequence comes before or after this, but has one of the last sort of like psychedelic flights of fancy. Allie, did you make it through Snoopy's skating routine?
You know, I might have skipped a little bit.
they're all lovely.
Oh, absolutely.
And
I was pressed for time.
Yes.
That was my only reason. I'll watch it again.
I think you got the gist of it.
Yeah. I got the gist.
And that's the thing. You watch
it's two psychedelic sequences in one, too, the Snoopy skating thing. Because they revisit the skating theme from the Christmas special,
yep.
Which was lovely. And then they throw some hockey thing in the middle.
Sure.
And I really actually like the psychedelic sequences because there's, I don't know if it was before or after this, but a sequence where Schroeder's playing piano.
It's lovely.
It's really gorgeous. And it's something that they can't do in the strips. And that's sort of the weird thing about this movie is it is a hard cut between here's some stuff that you like from the strips that we're revisiting, and here's a thing that you cannot do in a medium like comic strips. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Music and animation.
It's hard to show like, oh, Schroeder is a good pianist and we are moved by classical music in a comic strip.
When the piano grows to the size of an adult piano and he's still sitting at it, it's just gorgeous. Like, this is, I think, one of the few Charlie Brown related things that I would not mind having frames of it hanging on my wall.
Yeah. It very nicely describes what it feels like to appreciate a piece of classical music because it's got all these shots of Europe and churches and sort of people in robes marching and the things that a piece of
Beethoven.
And crosses,
crosses, crosses.
And cathedrals all over. Come down to Cathedral City.
And it makes Schroeder a little more likable because, as we have noted watching this, watching these specials, and even in this particular movie, Schroeder's kind of a drip.
Yeah.
He's not really great. He's not a good guy. He's not... doesn't really seem to like anybody.
Well, he's just so focused on his work, you know, like it's, there are those people that you'll love their work, but then like you wouldn't ever hang out with them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But at least this actually built out his character in a way that him just going, I like Beethoven, doesn't. I will also say just off the psychedelic sequences that although they are different from the comic, and of course not a thing you could do in the comic or in any of the TV specials, none of them felt particularly off model.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it didn't, none of these things felt particularly weird because I feel like generally Charlie Brown and the Peanuts world has always had sort of a, whether it was intentional or not, because of its simplicity, it always has had sort of a pop art feel. Mm-hmm. So for it to get Warhol-y or Peter Maxey doesn't feel jarring.
Yeah. They're not super grounded in some kind of reality. They can kind of pop out of it whenever they choose.
So they return to the hotel room. Charlie Brown is just like all but rolling around on the floor in his own feces.
Yeah.
F-E-C-E-S.
it made me kind of nauseous, like how sick Linus was getting and like the little bubbles over his head. Like it was just too reminiscent of a very bad like stomach flu kind of thing. And it made me feel a little sick.
Yes, he had that, but also Charlie Brown had that because so it's just the two of them. It's
two six, 7 year olds.
Two six,
just
7 year olds
deteriorating in front of each other.
Just deteriorating on a New York City hotel, like Tom Hanks's room from Big when he first moves to the city. Just this kind of okay, but stained and ugly radiator with paint chips flaking off. Just two boy children rolling on the floor with bubbles.
Just
over
in a
their
fortress
heads.
Made out of books and blankets.
Yes.
Can you imagine walking in there and seeing those two children just being dizzy and sick and then a dog drinking a glass of water? You would kill yourself.
What does the housekeeping person do in that situation? I just wanted to bring new towels. How did this happen?
That's the room next to the red room on Twin Peaks.
Oh, I'm now That's picturing great. The housekeeping staff also being Charlie Brown-sized children.
Oh, no. I guess they'd have to.
Hey, you gotta work.
Operating like a vacuum above their head. Yeah.
So pragmatic, Allie. Hey, look. You know, we can't all go to school.
Look, it's expensive in the big city.
And then and Charlie Brown's like, well, you're shit out of luck, dude. I got to get ready for this thing because I've been up all night in a fugue state. You've been walking the city and now I've got to go spell words. Puts on a very natty suit, goes to polish his shoes with Linus's blanket. Is Charlie Brown stupid or an asshole?
No, he's
That's
not
That's the
an
question
asshole.
Every episode, isn't it?
He's not manipulative.
He's also very, very sleep deprived at this point.
That is true.
I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
That he too. That he would pick up a thing that he knows to be, he'd have to be pretty sleep. I guess because
I almost put not even tired. I almost put my frozen food in my microwave instead of the freezer to store it last night. So
there you go.
I can feel like that's a pretty common mistake.
I definitely put my phone in the fridge.
No, oh, yeah, for sure.
Not on purpose.
Just cooling it down.
It's hot.
It's so nice pressed against my face.
Just my takes are too hot. Just got to stick them in there.
You use the flame emoji too many times.
Ha. Ha, ha. Too ha. Sick of a burn. Ha,
ha. So Charlie Brown puts on the nattiest little Steve Harvey outfit ever. And they go to the nationally televised spelling bee.
In what appears to be the Guggenheim.
The Guggenheim? Yeah. It's... Is the Google, we were talking about that, is that, but it's round, isn't it?
Or Charlie Brown's thing is the roundest, Charlie Brown's head is the roundest thing in this universe,
that
I'm sure.
That is true. It's like the Bizarro universe. It's just everything square. Get it? Different. They go to this thing, which is packed. And as Molly pointed out, and this didn't even occur to me, there are 10 children on stage, which means representing the 10 districts of America, I guess.
Or because we're cutting forward. Oh. We're down to the final 10,
perhaps.
Yeah.
There might have been some semifinals that we saw. Because there were, again, there were a lot more children on that bus.
Yeah.
In little paper hats.
What happened?
In this apartment hotel thing.
Oh, no. What if some of these were like just sacrifices for the lumps? Just get on the bus, go to the city.
What if that's what the spelling bee is? Just some lump feeding scheme.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the top two are the only people that don't get lumped. Turned into this.
Yeah, it's kind of like Rover from The Prisoner, we've decided.
That's true. And then we go to, and Molly pointed this out before the, well, first of all of Charlie Brown's friends are watching this on TV at home.
Yeah.
On like on the Ocho, on ESPN 8
or something. Lucy Channel.
Yeah. On the Lucy Channel. Because America has, it goes the Oscars, the Super Bowl, and the second grade spelling bee.
I'm sure Lucy hosts a chat show.
She does the after show and the podcast.
Now let's talk about why Charlie Brown's Hardwick.
And then, as Molly pointed out before we started, instead of in a movie that has used a bunch of fascinating visual techniques and psychedelic bits, instead what we get are 10 heads of children on a shit brown background. Allie, you must talk.
I loved that. I thought it looked great. I thought it was a really awesome choice. Like, I thought it was perfect, and I found it to be one of my favorite parts of the movie.
The visualization of it, I really liked. The fact that it was a spelling bee in its entirety.
In real time.
Made me, like, skip ahead a little.
Oh, I skipped ahead.
Oh, no. That wasn't me giving you permission to skip ahead. You did it anyway. No, I was more just saying, like, you don't have to show an entire spelling bee from beginning to end is my point.
But maybe the little kids watching it were excited that they could spell it, like Blue's Clues or like Face from Nickelodeon.
Yeah. Mm. I think my only complaint about that sequence was the floating letters that we know they are fully capable of because of the I before E sequence. Some of those would have helped as they were spelling out these words.
Maybe they used used their whole letter budget on I before E, which contains every fucking word in the human language.
I wonder if that's what happened. It's just like, well, we have this budget for like floating electric company style words. What do we do? Oh, well, we've already finished the movie. Well, it's something. I before E and vowels. Like.
But I agree, Allie, although you and I sort of part ways on how much of it they needed to show, the actual just like the
kids.
No,
I agree. It could have been short. Yes. I just meant the look of it.
I loved, yeah.
Like, I would want that framed. Those little heads.
I want just a family portrait in that style.
Me too.
On that weird Christmas card.
On that weird brown background.
I think Pantone just decided that is the ugliest color, right? Is that color?
Oh, that might be.
Maybe.
Yeah. And Molly said that you also wanted to do a supercut of the meat lump voice just going,
yeah. There's, yeah, because the meat lump reads out words, and then whenever someone gets eliminated, it goes like, rah! Like,
it's terrifying.
You get to hear what no sounds like in meat lump. And we can begin. That's the keystone that will help us unlock the rest of the language.
Oh, God. You and I just completely fall down the rabbit hole, and 10 years from now, we've got like those Klingon language camps, except for meat lump talk.
Yeah, that would be fine.
Oh, good. All right. There's a 10-year plan.
I would love to see meat lump Shakespeare. Are you kidding?
One by one, the children's little heads disappear. Absorbed by meat lumps, I assume.
I'm sure.
And that's why they look so terrified.
Maybe that's what the background is they just get absorbed into a lump right at that moment.
Whoa. Ooh, is that the color of the lump then?
That's what I pictured, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's canon now, everyone. And then it's down to Charlie Brown and also Schroeder?
Yeah, sort of alter Schroeder.
They do this a lot in these specials where it's just like, even when Linus and Snoopy sit down in the auditorium, there's two like garbage Charlie Browns sitting next to him and a garbage Patty on the other side. Like, just sort of these like, look, there are only so many different ways these
animating
kids can look.
Animating is hard.
Animating is hard. Blandishing is hard work. But all of that said, the winner of the spelling bee is a kid who looks exactly like Schroeder, and they do not do themselves any favors when the kid spells a word right, and then it cuts to Schroeder going, hey, that kid, if he gets that wrong, Charlie Brown's going to win. And it's just like, and there's no
I find myself rooting against that child for some reason. I can't explain it. I'm Schroeder.
Like, there is no recognition on Schroeder's face whatsoever that he is looking at someone who looks literally... Like, Molly, if you were watching TV and there was somebody who walked on and was like, "Hi, I'm Smalley Lewis," you'd just be like, "Oh, wait, that's me," right? Or...
I definitely had a moment. Remember those Pepsi commercials that had Halle Kay Eisenberg in them?
Vaguely.
And she was this tiny person who had very curly hair and dimples, and everyone in my family went, "You're on a Pepsi commercial right now." Like, that's definitely happened to me before.
But you would be able to recognize it.
Oh, yeah.
Or would it be so weird if, I don't know.
I would go, "No, that's not, I don't look like that." And they went, "No, certainly." So I think it was on the other peanuts to go, "Schroeder, how did you get, but you're here, can you buy locate? What happened, Schroeder?"
Schroeder is Dr. Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people know this.
Do you think
this.
That child goes back to his town and can play like harpsichord or something? Do you think he's like the alter Schroeder in a different town?
The Austin Powers harp.
Yes, down the line, he and Snoopy team up for a two-man mouth harp band. So it's down to Charlie Brown and Alter Schroeder and Charlie Brown. And everybody is like, "He's going to do it. He's going to win unless he doesn't because he's terrible." mixed messages. And Charlie Brown bones it. He misspells Beagle, the name of his own dog. Mm-hmm. The breed of his own dog.
I was waiting for the mouth harp to come back out.
Nope.
Like sort of some Manchurian candidate scenario. But no.
Nothing.
Chekhov's mouth harp. Nope.
It cannot help him now. Lucy turns off the TV in disgust, complains about Charlie Brown, turns the TV back on.
I loved that. That was really
funny. There are great little throwaway visual gags in this like that. That is one of my favorites as well. That somehow this event, like, "Well, I guess it's over. Hey, should we like roll credits or something?" Now, you know what, Ted? Just keep that camera pointed at that sad kid.
I love it.
Let's see how long he can be sad
for. Yeah, because they don't want to have the winner on TV. They want the loser.
imagine how disappointed, like the Arrested Development music plays somehow.
It would be like, "Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't win American Idol. You did, however. All right, keep the camera on this guy. He's just really, really sad."
Yeah.
And then they get on a bus. They go home.
Oh, the curb music?
Yeah.
I
mix those two up all the time.
The Arrested Development song is the Charlie Brown song.
Yes.
Pretty much exactly.
Oh, so you're thinking of...
I was thinking of the curb. Yeah.
Yeah. Although, like, a weird, like, minor key version of it to reflect this.
Oh, yeah. The weird minor key version of Linus and Lucy I found very distressing.
Me too. I didn't like it.
No. When Linus's search of the city included peeking through the front door of the New York City Public Library to see if he could, because of course you can see the entirety of it.
He probably has some like cool like
because the spelling section's right in the front.
Oh, true. The spelling section of the library. I was gonna say that he probably has some like Terminator goggle type things, or like he can
a heads up
like,
display.
Yeah, for his blanket. Yeah.
That's why his head is so odd shaped.
Yeah,
the ocular implants.
We finally understand.
Charlie Brown goes home and lays in a bed and doesn't get out of his bed.
Relatable.
Yeah. I don't even have to lose a spelling bee on national television to do that. I just have to wake up with a little sinus headache. And I'm like, "Well, what fuck today? It's already
like, it's hot."
Yeah, that's enough. Linus comes in and gives possibly the worst pep talk imaginable.
"We won without you."
Yeah. He's like, "Charlie Brown, we all missed you at school and the team won without you. And even though you lost the spelling bee and made a fool of yourself," like really just like does not help. But then it's gives true. Sort of like a very Linus-y like, "But did you notice something, Charlie Brown?" "No, what?" "The world kept going." Which is not a bad piece of advice until you remember that not 10 minutes ago, Linus was rolling around on the floor like he had just, like he was on a bad acid trip. Like, "I misplaced a piece of cloth."
Yeah.
"I'm
not the best person.
Dying." Yeah. But that's enough to get Charlie Brown out of bed, walks around the town, sees Lucy, who, and this is something we can all relate to. Often I will just go to the middle of a park with nobody else and stand up a football on end and watch it fall over.
And laugh.
And laugh and laugh and laugh. It didn't occur to me until like the second or third time I watched it through. Was Lucy replaying in her head all of the times that she made Charlie Brown fall over?
Oh, football. We have sure had some good goofs, haven't we?
We had joy. We had fun. We had Seasons in the Sun. It's Seasons in the Sun. Oh, it's him singing to his football.
Yeah, I thought she was practicing how to pull it away, but that's so much funnier that she's just recounting it.
And then Charlie Brown sneaks up on the football for the last 45 minutes of the movie.
Also very Bugs Bunny-y.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Molly's favorite thing.
He hides behind a tree. And the sides of his head stick out. It's just my face. Like, yes, of course. You can't even hide behind a tree correctly, Charlie Brown.
And then he runs and he's gonna kick it, and she pulls it away because she can smell Charlie Brown's pheromones. Or was she just in the middle of the field?
I think it was chance.
Just chance?
Mm-hmm.
Just sheer chance.
I think she might have spent a lot of time studying Charlie Brown's instant replay staggering footage and is just very used to his gait.
That does seem to be the only thing that she's ever used it for.
Yeah, she's just studying for his undoing.
Her game tape.
Yeah.
What a freak.
What a freak. What was your name?
What a freak bitch.
Freak bitch. Freak bitch, Charlie Brown. And then she pulls the football away, and then they both look at the screen as if to say to the audience, "Oh, what the fuck else do you want?"
You're right.
And it's over. And then we see
back
pictures.
To one.
Molly and I were watching it through before the podcast. I pointed out it looks like an In Memoriam segment.
Oh yeah.
it's just pictures of all these older looking people floating by. All of these people died to make a boy named Charlie Brown.
These are the people that were turned into lumps in the making of this movie. I imagine when Lucy and Charlie Brown both turn to the camera that it like freeze frames, and then there's some closing monologue from Lucy like, "Well, we've sure had some good times. Charlie Brown sure did get humiliated, right, folks? I'm Lucy."
That was all cut from the – that's what they decided to cut for time.
Yeah. She just kind of steps to the front of the camera and goes, "Well, guys, we've had some good laughs, and we've all had a good old time at Charlie Brown's expense." And
because this is the universe where Lucy is controlling all of the media. And so –
maybe she orchestrated this whole thing.
Wait, that's why she has all of the footage of him. Because she's been recording this movie.
It's a Truman Show.
It's the Truman Show,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. She's an evil genius.
Well, because can we talk about sort of the whole meta thing surrounding this movie of like, first Charlie Brown's like, "I don't want to see my faults projected onto a big screen."
I got it. That gave me a good chuckle.
Yeah. And then the failing on national TV in front of all his friends. And so maybe that's the frame.
And that's the show. I in my head, having watched all of the episodes, and Allie, I you've watched the two good episodes from
the 60s.
I've
watched many, because I also, I've watched the You're Not Elected Charlie Brown, and I was running for president in elementary school.
That will be coming up season two for us.
Mm-hmm. I watched the one, I forget what it's called, it came out early 70s, that has Joe Cool, which is my favorite song. Mm-hmm.
That is
all
a great
them.
Song.
What's funny is I was listening to Joe Cool.
Before it was cool?
When I was driving down the 5, like at like 2 a.m, speeding, and I got a ticket, and I felt just like, "Oh, I'm Joe Cool."
Now let me ask you this: did you try putting on a pair of sunglasses and leaning nonchalantly against your car?
Oh, of course.
Were you wearing your T-shirt that had your name on it?
Yes, and my alter ego name.
Do you make up lyrics to the Joe Cool song to describe what you're doing sometimes?
Yeah.
Joe Cool getting a ticket. Paying for a speeding ticket down on the 5. Yeah.
So, Allie, your version of the Joe Cool song sounds a little Randy Newman-ish,
so
whereas
does...
you went for the straight up Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
So here is my proposed order. If somebody is not familiar with the Peanuts universe, mm-hmm. this is how I and we and one only had the 1960s episodes. I would say a boy named Charlie Brown, and then the Halloween episode, and then the Christmas episode.
Because you saved the best for last.
Yeah. But
don't start with Christmas, you maniacs. It's the best one.
I think you go chronologically. Yeah. I think you go Christmas first, Halloween, then boy named.
Oh, you go chronologically by actual chronology. I was going by holiday chronology and ending with Charlie Brown Christmas. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think it's, well, that's kind of like, I haven't seen the movie that starts off Firefly, because I'm not going to, it's, you're asking for a larger investment of attention.
That's true.
You know, and it's, I think if the Christmas special doesn't whet your appetite, then you maybe shouldn't sit through this movie.
Mm. Mm. I think this movie is, I think this movie does a better job, maybe even than the Christmas special, which is wonderful and perfect. This really, if one has never read the strip or seen the specials, I think this gives you an incredibly clear idea of this universe.
But you would introduce someone to the universe with something that includes I before E?
I would tell them probably not to watch this movie.
Ever?
If just you're throw it in the ocean.
Yeah. Like, if the question is like,
what do you start,
oh, I've never seen Charlie Brown before. What should I watch? Probably the... Yeah, probably Christmas or Halloween.
That's the conclusion we generally come to. I think I'm also just so shell-shocked from all of the garbage 1960s Charlie Brown episodes mm-hmm. that this felt like so well realized and thought out and on model that it made me – that it immediately – also, I can only hold so many things in my brain at one time.
Yes.
That this was just like, oh, this is the top of the marching order for me. This is very – it's very well done.
So I haven't seen any bad Charlie Brown things. I've only seen the hits. So for me, this is the worst thing I've seen. Keep in
no
mind.
No kidding.
Well,
okay.
Because I've only seen Charlie – like the two big holiday ones.
We don't. I don't know if we've seen enough to throw you into the deep end, but I think It Was a Short Summer is definitely –
that's
because there is a matriarchy sequence in that that I enjoyed very much, and I think you would also enjoy.
I would like to check it out.
I didn't enjoy it.
No, but actually,
vape.
I'm definitely saying it's easily the worst out of Charlie Brown Christmas and Charlie Brown Halloween of those three.
Mm-hmm.
Easily, right? But I'm not. I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would tie it with Christmas. I really liked it. I was surprised because I think I saw it like in the early 2000s and was like, this is very bad. And watching it again, I appreciated it. Molly, where would you rank this among the best of the specials?
Well, it's definitely in the top three.
Yep.
Which ones have we watched so far? Because it's, I can't, there's not any that come to mind like, well, don't forget You're in Love, the classic.
Nope.
Like, no, this
that's
is definitely.
Charlie Brown's All Stars, terrible. You're in Love, Charlie Brown, terrible. Short Summer, Charlie Brown, terrible.
I do
He's
think.
He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, terrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Allie, if you want an example of the absolute lowest point for this.
I do.
He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown.
I will look at it.
It's just everyone's off model. Everyone? Everyone.
Yeah.
oh, and it includes Roy, though. I think that's worth. Roy's my fave. Continues to be my favorite.
This is, I don't know if Molly or you follow Peanuts 50 years ago today, right? On Twitter?
Yeah.
This is Roy's week. It's a Roy week.
Roy week?
Yes.
We should all, oh, I wish I had pulled up the recipe for the dog Roy that Sarah Shea sent us.
Oh.
We'll link to it in the description for this podcast. But,
perfect.
But I think that you have to earn the amount of blandishing and sort of visual sequences that they did in this movie, I think you kind of have to earn that after a while. So I definitely think you watch the TV specials first.
Okay.
And kind of get settled into this universe. And then you can watch Schroeder play piano for half an hour.
There you go. So Christmas Halloween movie.
That's your primer.
Yeah. It's sort of the Star Wars Empire Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jedi, look, it's part of the original trilogy and we have to
You
like
kind of have to, for continuity reasons, yeah. You got to watch it. But
So that's... And... Any final thoughts? Allie, any final thoughts?
I really wish, well, I could have watched just the beginning of this a few times. I thought the beginning of it was so beautiful mm-hmm. and just so kind of Calvin and Hobbesy, like just like that tone of like summer.
Yeah.
Like kids. Like I love that feeling. And I love, like I do root for Charlie Brown. I get sad when he fails. So the song Failure Face kind of hurt. But I really liked it. It makes me want to watch more of the Charlie Brown movies too.
Yeah. Molly?
I kept thinking of just imposter syndrome. Like that seemed to be what this special was about, was Charlie Brown going like, well, I don't know, just sort of this level of scrutiny that he'd not been exposed to in any of these other specials, right?
As if to say that, like, by winning at something, Charlie Brown's life has become immeasurably worse.
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder if that's, like, the overall, like, it's, now, having said that out loud, I'm now like, well, it's probably best that Charlie Brown doesn't succeed at
He obviously can't crack having any kind of success. He just is not built for it.
No.
But he doesn't know that. I think that's the painful part.
Well, that is, of course, that Charlie Brown is perhaps one of the least self-aware people on the planet.
That's true.
Is that true? I feel like he's pretty self-aware.
In this, he is. In other episodes, not so much.
And this definitely had the little miracle that we sort of look for at the end of specials.
Yeah.
Because some of them just end with like, well, everyone is shitty and they hate Charlie Brown. The end.
Yeah. Whereas this is just sort of like, I mean, he doesn't win at the end, but he has tasted some success and he can get out of bed and rejoin the regular world.
Yeah.
Which is
a victory.
A triumph for him.
Yeah.
One of the questions we always ask at the end of these things is, did Charlie Brown's tribulations, did he bring them upon himself? Or did the world thrust them upon him?
I think it was a little of column A, a little of column B.
I agree.
I think that, well, he definitely was pushed and at least encouraged to do this as a means of self-esteem building, which is kind of ironic. The idea that if he won, he'd bring some pride to both himself and his peers and his school. But then I wish that he had just been able to stand a little stronger about stopping, just being like, and I've had my win and now I'm going to go home. Like Vegas rules.
You got to know when to hold them.
Yes.
Know when to fold them.
But yeah, I feel bad. I feel like in school or in life, you feel like a pressure to make people like you. And that's very strong with Charlie. Charlie Brown. And it did feel weird just hanging there. But yeah, I felt bad for him. Yet I wish he had a little bit more strength.
And it's not like, I mean, they told him there's a spelling bee, but they did not put a gun to his head. And he was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Why did he miss the word beagle?
He choked.
It was just nerves and not a matter that he was.
I think nerves and sleep deprivation.
Yeah. Like he obviously has not slept in a week and has only been subsisting on cold cereal and cartons of milk.
Yes.
It seemed also to be the human response to being shown a slideshow of all your faults is to go, well, I'm going to take back this day somehow.
Yes. Yeah. That's an important thing to that he is spending the rest of the movie recovering from whatever traumatic shit Lucy has been projecting on the wall.
Well, I think that's kind of why I kept thinking of imposter syndrome is because that is the fear that you have when you have imposter syndrome is that everyone knows your faults and has them itemized somewhere and is just waiting to spring them on you.
Yes. And in this world, that is a reality.
It is absolutely true. There's a whole PowerPoint.
Allie?
Yes.
What is something that you learned from this episode?
I learned that even if everything goes wrong, the world keeps going.
Molly?
I learned that there's only one word in the language that ends with S-E-D-E, and it is supersede. And then there's succeed and intercede and exceed.
I'm Josh Kagan.
I'm Molly Lewis.
I'm Allie Gertz.
And this has been Peanuts Gallery. We'll see you in the fall.
And break! Questions? Comments? Concerns? Tweet them at us at Peanuts Podcast.
You blockheads.
Admit it, but this could mean the start of something great for Charlie Brown.